Hi, my name is Kirk Kinder, and this is Saving Yourself from Wall Street, the podcast for people who want to avoid Wall Street's sales tactics, high cost, and conflicted advice so they can take control of their financial life. So let's get to it. So in this week's podcast, we're going to talk about the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, also known as the CARES Act, or what you could call as the bailout. And, you know, I just want to start off, don't you just love how the government always comes up with these cute titles for their bills, the Patriot Act, the Secure Act, they always have something like that. I always wonder if there is there someone whose sole job in D.C. is coming up with names for the titles of these bills. Considering the waste in D.C., I figure they probably even have a whole department dedicated to naming, probably called the Bureau under the Lower Level Secretary of the House and Interior Task Force, also known as bullshit. But anyway, I digress. But what we're going to talk about a little bit here is just what is in the CARES Act. And in this podcast, we're going to focus on the issues that address individuals. And then I'll do a separate podcast when we talk about small business opportunities with the CARES Act, as well as just some general input on the bailout to major corporations, the $400 billion that was given to the Treasury Department to bail out the big corporations. I'll show you how, utilizing the Federal Reserve, they're going to turn that into a $4 trillion leverage bet. But we'll talk about that next time. Right now, I just want to focus on the big issues that are going to affect most of the individuals, I guess non-business-owning individuals. So there are several different ways that the CARES Act is going to address needs for individuals. The big one that gets all the headlines is the $1,200 recovery rebate check or stimulus check. But there's other things in here. It talks about unemployment insurance. They have things for retirement accounts. They've got some tax return information that's being changed on there. So we'll kind of jump in and dig into it a little bit just to give you some more information. Also, I did a video on this to give you some more slides. So if you go to savingyourselffromwallstreet.com or go to YouTube and Google, or not Google, but go to YouTube and search for Saving Yourself from Wall Street, I've got this in video format as well where I'll bring up a few slides. Really can't do slides on a podcast, so if you want more visual, that's where you should go. But again, let's start off with the headline benefit. As I already mentioned, every adult taxpayer is going to receive a $1,200 check. If you're married filing joint, you're going to be getting $2,400. So 1,200 times two. The other thing is every child in the household under the age of 17, you'll get another $500. Now, the key thing to remember here, the under age 17. So you may have children who are 17 or 18 and still in high school. So you would figure you'd get, $500 for them, but you don't. Same with kids who are going to college. The reason is they're basing this on the child tax credit. And to get the child tax credit on your tax return, your child must be under the age of 17 to get that during the tax year. Okay, so again, you have a single individual, they have one child under the age of 17, they're going to get $1,700. Whereas a married couple, if you have, say, two kids, you're looking to get upwards of $3,400. Now, the key phrase in my last example is could receive up to. The recovery rebate is income dependent, which means once you go above a certain limit, you're going to be phased out of the rebate check until you get nothing. So specifically what it is for every $100 of income above the credit limit, the income limit, the recovery rebate drops by $5. So what is the limit? So it's all based on your adjusted gross income. And the threshold amounts for that are going to be married filing joint, $150,000. Head of household is going to be $112,500. And then married filing separately or single individuals at $75,000. So if you're married with a household income of $170,000, you're $20,000 above the limit. So what you do is you take that $20,000, divide that by 100, and you come up with $200. then you multiply 200 by $5. This equates to $1,000. So essentially, your rebate check will be $1,000 less than the maximum amounts. And I mentioned the videos again. There's a really good graph that we're using that kind of shows you the exact phase-out amounts if you're without children, with one child, two children, three children. So it does go up. You know, the $150,000 limit for married, family, joint actually goes up if you have more children. So you might want to check into that a little bit. But those are basically the adjusted gross income levels. Now, as I said at the start, this is actually a 2020 refundable tax credit. So usually when you get a refundable tax credit, you file your tax return and you get the credit at that time. So if this is a 2020 refundable tax credit, if this was a normal time, you would file your tax return between January and April of 2021, and that's when you'd get this credit. But because of the recession, because of the coronavirus, they're giving this credit in advance. That's all it is. So you've heard a lot of things about how it's based on 2018 or 2019 taxes. Yes, but it's actually a 2020 refundable tax credit. Now, the government will look at either your 2018 or 2019 tax return to determine your eligibility, but it is a 2020 credit. So the other big thing here is, let's say you made too much money for the credit based on your 2018 or 2019 tax return. So you went way past those threshold amounts to the point where you have zeroed out your potential refund check. But then this year you get laid off. So your income is going to be substantially below where it was in 2018 or 2019. The good news is you will get this credit, but the bad news is you won't get it until you actually file your 2020 tax return, which will likely be sometime in early 2021 between January and April. So even though you might need the money desperately right now because you lost your job, you're going to have to wait to get this credit until you file your 2020 tax return. Now, the flip side, let's say you qualified for the credit based on your 2018 or 2019 tax return, and this year you made a lot more money. You know, maybe you sell toilet paper or hand sanitizer on Amazon or eBay, and you're just rolling in the dough this year. Well, you're actually going to luck out here, because what's going to happen is there's no clawback when you file your 2020 return. So even though you qualified based on your 2018 or 2019 return, but you would not qualify for a 2020 refundable credit based on your 2020 income, they're not going to take that money back from you. Now, the other thing this doesn't really do a very good job of addressing, looking at just 2018 or 2019 returns, is, you know, divorces, if you had children born in 2019 or 2020, and of course it doesn't look at any deaths in the family. So you can see there's going to be some flaws with this process. And, you know, when dealing with the government, that's going to happen. Another big question I get quite a bit is people who are only on Social Security or maybe some Social Security and a little bit of other income, and they don't file. They don't make enough money to file a tax return. Are they going to get this rebate? And the answer is yes. Yes, they are. I know there's a lot of people in that situation that are trying to file a 2019 return just to get it in the system. Not saying that's a bad idea, but right now the government is saying that they are going to process these rebate checks for you just based on your Social Security data. So as it stands right now, you look like you're going to be okay. Now, the government has mandated that these payments be processed as soon as possible, but that's looking like the earliest we'll start to see them is late April or early May. So don't expect anything immediately. The next question I get a lot is, how do I get the recovery rebate? Now, this also has some issues. If you receive Social Security from the government, then the government will just deposit this money into the account that you currently get your Social Security benefits. So you don't have to do anything so long as that account is still good. Now, if you put your 2018 or 2019 tax refunds into a bank account, then the government is going to send the money to that account. All right, so whatever was on file in 2018 or 2019. Now, the problem is that's only for people who, again, get a tax refund. If you owed on your taxes and you did not provide a bank account information when you filed, well, then what happens is they're going to send you a check. You're going to just receive a check in the mail. Now, you can obviously see some issues immediately with this. What if you change banks or move since you last filed your return? Now, if you did change your bank or your address, or if you didn't provide your account number to the IRS initially because you owed and you want to get them that information for direct deposit, you can actually call them to update this information. Now, the phone number you're going to call is just their general toll-free number, 1-800-829-1040. And the 1040 is because, well, that's the tax return, right? The 1040. Now, I'm going to forewarn you, you better be ready to be on hold. You might be able to even watch a whole season of Better Call Saul before you get through the IRS. They've got long wait times under normal circumstances. I usually tell people you're looking at 45 minutes to an hour normally. Now you throw on top of this reduced staffing due to the virus and the fact that you're probably going to see some higher calls here so that people can get their bank account or address changed. So, you know, put out, you know, get a glass of wine, put out some cheese, relax, listen to some music, watch some TV, just leave the phone on so that it's just as soon as you finally get somebody after an hour or so, you'll be ready to go. Okay, so that's basically the big thing. That's the rebate checks. That's what everybody's excited about. I'm not really a fan of this because there's so many people that really don't need the money that probably are going to get money. And then there's going to be a lot of people who probably could use the money, but they don't qualify for it. So again, I use an example of somebody who made a lot of money in 2018, 2019. They got phased out, but maybe they don't have any income right now and they could really use something. So I'm not a big fan of it. I'd rather just see it go more into the unemployment insurance so that we know that people who are losing their jobs that actually are having an economic impact are going to get something. But hey, if you can get the money, take it. Okay, so another thing that the government did to try to help ease the financial burden for folks is they've really loosened up the rules for distributions from retirement plans. So the government's authorized individuals to tap into their IRA and or 401ks to get through this mess. Now, as a financial planner, I'm going to implore you not to do this. The reason is I have seen so many people tap into these accounts and it ends up just having an enormously detrimental long-term impact on their financial future. Once people start to see these accounts as short-term savings or emergency savings, it just seems like they're always going back to the well to get some more money for it. I've just seen it too many times in my career. So, you know, the last step should be to tap in your IRA or 401k. I mean, I really hope you do that. But if you have no other choice, this is good. Okay, I guess this is good. So, you know, here's the details. You can actually take a distribution up to $100,000 from your IRA, employer-sponsored plan, or a combination of both. The distribution must be made in calendar year 2020, and you must be impacted by the coronavirus in a different way. So what's one of the ways? Obviously, if you're personally diagnosed by the COVID-19 virus, you qualify. If you had a spouse or dependent diagnosed with it, you qualify. If you were forced to be quarantined, or if you were laid off or furloughed because of the virus, you qualify. If you're unable to work due to not having childcare, you qualify. If you own a business that had to close down due to the virus, you qualify. And then here's the last one. Any other situation where the IRS deems it okay. Okay, so a lot of leniency here, a lot of massive discretion. You would just have to show that in some fashion you were impacted, and I have a feeling it can be pretty weak. Even if you bring some weak sauce to the table, they're going to allow it. So what are the provisions here? They're going to exempt you from the 10% penalty if you're under 59 and a half. So you're still going to pay the income tax, but you're going to be exempt from that 10% penalty. So that's something great for people who are under 59 and a half. If you're over 59 and a half, remember, no worries. You don't have a penalty anyway. Another thing that they're doing here is they're removing the mandatory withholding requirements. Usually when you withdraw from an employer-provided retirement plan, you're going to be subject to 20% tax withholding. That's being waived in this case. Another really neat feature, and this might be how you can use this as a short-term emergency and still not impact your long-term retirement plans, you can do a rollover in the next 3 years. So essentially, you have 3 years to roll over your distribution to another IRA. What this means is if you take the money now to get you through a rough patch, you've got 3 years to reimburse or roll it over to an IRA. This also means you can avoid the taxes on that distribution. So that could be very helpful. It gives you more time to get back on your feet and refill that IRA bucket. Now, the only bad thing is you're going to have to do an amended tax return to get your tax money back, but that's just an administrative feature. This is still a really good provision. So if you do dip into it early because you're having some issues, I highly recommend you look to see how you can get that money back into the IRA over the ensuing 3 years. The other thing they're doing, which could be helpful, is they're allowing you to spread the income over 3 years. So if you take let's say a $90,000 distribution from your IRA, you can take $30,000 for the next 3 years to be taxed on. So what does that do? Well, it dampens the tax bill a little bit. It's going to ensure that if you took $90,000, you wouldn't get pushed up into a much higher tax bracket this year. You can kind of control your tax bite a little bit. Although the one thing you need to think about is if you lost your job and your income is going to be much lower this year, you still have the option, and you might want to take all the income in the current year. You might as well get taxed at a lower rate if you're going to be stay in the 12% bracket and normally you're in the 24% bracket. So it still could be a good idea to take it this year, but you have the option to spread it out over 3 years. So that's good. We like that. Another thing they did for IRA in 401ks is they waived the required minimum distribution for 2020. So that's good if you're somebody who is, past 70 and a half and you need to take your RMD. You don't have to this year. They're letting you keep it in there. So if you're somebody who doesn't need the money and you're just forced to take it out and pay taxes on it, you can leave it in for another year. Another cool thing about this is they are allowing you, if you've already taken your RMD this year, to put it back into your account. So that's pretty cool. So if you're somebody who right away in January took your RMD, you can put it back in. Now, if you're within 60 days of distribution, it's really easy. You just pop it back in. No biggie. It's not an issue. If you're outside the 60 days, you can still do it under the liberal rules for the coronavirus effects. Essentially, what's going to happen is you still have 3 years to put the money back in this RMD. You still have 3 years to put it back in if you want. Again, it's going to require that you amend returns, but it's still a pretty good option if you really don't need that RMD. Now, the only thing is, this does not apply to people who have an inherited IRA. A non-spouse is going to still have to take the RMD. So if you inherited an IRA from your grandparents or your parents or someone else, you're still going to be taking your RMD this year and paying tax on it. That's not going to change. There's no provision in the tax code that allows for a rollover of an inherited IRA. So basically, you're going to have to take that still. So if it's your IRA or 401k, it's good news. If it's inherited, no change. Now, I mentioned at the outset that there's going to be some changes to the tax code, the tax return that should be helpful. The first one deals with charity. So what they did is they created a $300 above the line tax deduction for charity. So what does above the line mean? Well, that means it's before you get to your final adjusted gross income. So if you look at your 1040, your tax return, you'll see the very first part, you list all your income. And then below that, you have adjustments to income. This is going to be an adjustment to income. And what's really cool about this is right now, you cannot take charitable deductions as a write-off if you do not itemize your deductions. And since the Trump tax bill passed a year ago, they increase the standard deduction substantially. So most people actually take the standard deduction and do not itemize. This means most people cannot deduct their charitable expenses. There's only about 10% of Americans right now that actually itemize. The other 90% take the standard deduction. So while this $300 isn't a large number, it now allows the other 90% of Americans to deduct some of their charitable givings. So that's good. I'd like to see that number go up just to encourage giving to charities, and I'd like to see it made permanent. But, you know, at least they're doing something to try to help charities, because they're going to be impacted enormously. You know, as everybody's income goes down, charitable deductions are going to go down. So, you know, little things. This $300 has to be a cash donation. So if you donate goods to Goodwill, Vietnam Veterans, AMVETS, any of these things, that does not count. It has to be a cash donation. And also, the cash cannot go into a donor advised fund or any other similar charitable foundations. Okay, so there's one other charitable change to the tax return this year, and I really don't think it's going to impact many people. But right now, as it stands, if you itemize, you can deduct up to 60% of your adjusted gross income if you give that to charity. That number has gone from 60% to 100%. So you can essentially give all of your adjusted gross income to charity and get a tax write-off this year. Again, I don't see many people giving 60% or more of their income to charity. If you are doing that, God bless you. It's fantastic. But most people don't, but I just wanted you to know about this. Another tax item that's going to be changed is medical expenses. So you can now deduct over-the-counter medical expenses when using a health savings account, flexible spending account, or Archer medical savings accounts. So this includes expenses for all kinds of things. So if you're buying zinc, if you're buying Tamiflu, it even goes down to the point where you buy things for menstruation. So yeah, we're talking about menstruation on a finance podcast. But all of these things that you can do, you can now deduct straight out of those accounts. So that's good. There's a couple other medical benefits that are going to apply as well. This isn't so much tax returns, but Medicare beneficiaries will be eligible to receive the coronavirus vaccine once it's released at no cost. During the coronavirus emergency period, Medicare Part D recipients must be given the ability to have, upon request, up to 90-day supply of medication prescribed and filled. And then they're also opening up telehealth services as temporarily covered expenses for things like HSAs or high deductible health plans. All of those things now are eligible. Telehealth is eligible for deductions. Okay, another big area that got impacted by this bill or this law is dealing with student loans. Okay, the biggie if you have student loans is student loan payments are deferred until September 30th, 2020. During this time, no interest will accrue on your debt. Now, unfortunately, though, while required payments are suspended, voluntary payments are not prohibited. And by default, payments will continue unless you take proactive measures to contact your loan provider and pause the payments. So what this means is you need to contact your lender if you want to defer your loan payments. This isn't a broad-based delay. It doesn't mean because you have loans, it delays. You have to call them up and say you want to take the delay. You want to defer it. Also notable in this period of time is this will continue to count towards any loan forgiveness programs. If you're trying to qualify for a program that will ultimately forgive the entirety of your federal student debt, such as the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, you should absolutely pause your payments immediately, because what's going to happen is they're not going to hold this against you. You don't have to make that up on the back end. So you essentially get some freebies here. You're not going to have to make the payments until September 30th. So the time between now and then is just going to end up being forgiven. So if you are trying to get any kind of loan forgiveness, you definitely want to call your lender up and get this delay. Additionally, all involuntary debt collections are also suspended through September 30th, 2020. This not only includes wage garnishment or the reduction of other federal benefits, but it also includes reduction of any tax refund for student loan purposes. So as such, borrowers of student debt who are delinquent on payments, it would normally be subject to the reduction of their tax refund, have an incentive to file their tax returns early enough so that the refund is processed before this relief expires. Okay? So basically, they're not going to cut your pay, they're not going to cut your other federal benefits, and you're going to actually get your full refund. They're not going to keep it. Okay. A couple other little benefits dealing with education. If you had to withdraw from school during the middle of the semester because of a qualifying emergency, they're going to eliminate the repayment of the Pell Grant if you receive one of those. They're also going to cancel any direct loan that was taken to pay for the semester. So you're not going to have to repay either the Pell Grant or direct loan if you had to leave the school for medical reasons or if it was shut down. So that's good. Okay, the last area I kind of want to talk about is unemployment benefits. And as I mentioned, I was really hoping that this would be where the bulwark of the money would go. I think this is probably the best area because if people are losing their jobs, they're going to file for unemployment. I know it stinks for people who might just have lower incomes, but you still have an income. So you may not need those rebate checks. Whereas people who lose their job, they need the unemployment insurance. So anyway, what's going to happen here is some little different things. This is the first time that self-employed individuals or people who are generally ineligible for unemployment compensation benefits, they're going to be eligible for up to 39 weeks of benefits via this provision. So this is going to help the restaurant owners, the retail shop owners, people who are facing devastation right now who normally, if their business went under, would not get unemployment assistance. They're going to get it this time. So that's great. That's fantastic. The other thing, the government's going to start unemployment insurance starting the first week of unemployment. Usually when you file, what happens is you have to wait a week before you start to get your benefits. And the thinking behind that is the government says, well, we don't want people jumping on. We want them, you know, if they're going to go a week without pay, they might be incentivized to look for work, get work. Well, right now they're just saying, okay, as soon as you lose your work, as soon as you file, we're going to pay you. So that's good. You're not going to have that normal waiting period. The other nice thing, regular unemployment compensation is going to be bumped up by $600 per week. So this has the ability to dramatically increase the amount of money an individual is entitled to while receiving unemployment benefits. So just to put it in perspective, the average weekly unemployment benefit for states, most states, is about $400. So with this plan, you're basically looking at, you know, an increase of 150% or more thanks to the CARES Act. So that's good. It's going to put a little bit more money in people's pockets. The other thing they're doing is they're going to extend unemployment compensation for up to another 13 weeks or another quarter. So where you normally would run out of unemployment benefits, you now are going to have an extra 13 weeks of benefits to help you get through this. And, you know, who knows how long this will take. You know, if we go a month and they let us kind of start to go back to work and it kind of normalize a little bit, modify the social distancing a tad, you know, it may not be that big of a thing. But I tell you what scares me is they have not come out with any kind of metric as far as what would entail, you know, what is the safe to get back in the pool kind of thing. We don't know if it's going to be, you know, how do they define the apex of the disease? Is it just going to be if anybody's dying, they're going to keep this going? Is it going to be, you know, certain growth rate? Nobody knows. That's the problem. So if nobody really has identified when we go back to normal, more than likely I expect them to, some would say err on the side of caution. I would say it's politicians looking to cover their asses. You know, no politician wants to be accused of letting people die. And anybody that eases up a little bit is going to be accused of exactly that. So I don't know how long this will go, but the other thing too is it is scary to see you know, what a precarious position we're in. I had read a report that said that small businesses employ I think it was 79 million people in the U.S. And most small businesses right now, if they don't lay anybody off, have enough money to get to maybe mid-April or late April. If they laid off 10% of their workforce, that would carry them up to mid-May. And if they laid off 50% of their workforce, that would get them probably into mid-June. So think about that, though. 50% of the workforce. 79 million people. Could you just imagine having, you know, 39 million people laid off? That's massive. That's enormous. And while it's great the government's stepping in here, if that's for an extended period of time, that's going to have some serious impacts. So I just wanted to go through a little bit of the CARES Act that applies to individuals. We're here to answer questions. We're here to help out in any way we can. Next podcast, we're going to look at the small business options. So if you own a small business, what can you do there? And we'll also discuss the big business bailout, and I'll kind of show you how I'm not really thrilled with it. It's essentially allowing, it's a backdoor way to allow the Fed to leverage the money. Kind of shady in my view, and also dangerous. But we'll talk about it. Next podcast, I'm also going to talk about Wells Fargo is in the news again for kind of shafting customers, and we'll talk about that. So again, thanks for listening, and any questions, just let me know. Well, that's it for this episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. I appreciate you stopping in. As always, you can find our podcast, along with other articles and videos, at savingyourselffromwallstreet.com. And now, the lawyers say hi.
Saving Yourself from Wall Street is hosted by Kirk Kinder. Kirk Kinder is the owner of Picket Fence Financial, a fee-only financial planning firm. Picket Fence Financial is regulated by the states of Maryland and Florida in accordance and in compliance with securities laws and regulations. Picket Fence Financial does not render or offer to render personalized financial or tax advice through the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.